Global markets react to the U.S. debt downgrade.
It's not exactly panic, but it's no picnic either.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update from Marketplace.org, our podcast. It's Monday, August 8th.
Which turns out is your birthday,
it
Steve.
Is
happy
my birthday today. Thank you, Jeremy.
Coming up, we'll hear about reaction from Wall Street and from around the globe to the debt downgrade.
Also, truck shipments are up, but there aren't enough truckers.
And a driverless car gets into a crash. What in the world could have gone wrong?
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
Well, investors had their say this morning. U.S. markets were down about 2% in early trading. Same with markets in Europe and Asia.
The price of oil has dropped to about $83 a barrel, and the price of gold has jumped to almost $1,700 an ounce, a place that it hasn't been before. Interestingly, investors are not fleeing government bonds. The interest rate on 10-year U.S. debt has dropped to less than 2.5%.
Let's get reaction from Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. And she is with us live from New York, as she is every Monday. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
Well, what do you make of the market reaction to the downgrade so far?
Well, I think it comes against the backdrop of a lot of downgrading of growth expectations that's been happening over the last week or two. So people have been marking down their forecasts for the U.S. and also for Europe and even emerging markets. So it's in some senses reflection of those broader worries that the global economy is slowing down and maybe a little more precarious than we had thought before.
People are more concerned with growth than they are with the actual downgrade of U.S. government debt.
I think that that's right. I mean, the S&P doesn't know any secret that we don't already know about the U.S. fiscal outlook. It's just a reminder that there are a lot of big structural problems still facing the global economy.
All right. Well, S&P has been holding a conference call this morning, and I want to play you a little bit of that. Here's John Chambers, who is chairman of S&P's Sovereign Debt Rating Committee, explaining the downgrade.
We think that elected officials across the political spectrum are unable to proactively take measures to put U.S. public finances on a sustainable footing in the same sort of manner as some of our most highly rated governments.
So Washington unable to come together and get the U.S. on a sustainable footing. Is that your big takeaway from this downgrade?
Well, I think, look, it's easy to blame the politicians, but what's going on is we have a lot of big fiscal challenges, and we can't really resolve them without taking lower retirement benefits, paying more taxes, and we don't tend to elect politicians that tell us those things. So I think what I take away from the S&P downgrade is that we do have a big challenge ahead of us, and we really need to start facing it if we want to protect, really, our way of life.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. Thanks so much, as always.
It's my pleasure.
Well, Jeremy and Julia, China, of course, is the biggest holder of U.S. debt outside of the Federal Reserve, and it has had a full weekend to react to the downgrade by S&P, and react it certainly did. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz is with us now on the line from Shanghai. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Steve.
How has China reacted to this downgrade?
Well, it had some pretty tough words for the U.S. The state-run press ran an editorial this weekend that said the good old days of the U.S. borrowing itself out of trouble are over. But that's really just rhetoric. The government's posturing for its own domestic audience. China's the biggest foreign holder of U.S. debt, but it's not going to dump that debt. China buys U.S. Treasury bonds in order to keep its currency artificially low, and that in turn keeps its exports cheap and keeps people employed. And this is sort of the circle that binds the U.S. and China together. China buys our debt so it can export goods to us, and we keep borrowing money from China so we can afford all those goods.
Well, Rob, I know Asian markets plunged today, as we said at the outset of the show. How much of that was about the downgrade?
Well, I talked to a few economists about this today, and the consensus seemed to be not as much as you might think. There's a lot of other things Asian investors are worried about, including the European debt crisis and unemployment numbers from the U.S. I spoke with economist Arthur Krober about this today, and here's what he said.
The U.S. downgrade among those pieces of information is probably ranks like 30th or 40th behind the U.S. latest U.S. economic data, which was pretty unpleasant, and what's coming out of Europe.
So it's not the downgrading per se, but it's what the downgrading represents that Asian markets seem to be responding to.
Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Rob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
So really, what is it about a credit downgrade that's such a bummer? I mean, foreign investors are buying as much U.S. debt today as they did on Friday. So what is it that we're worried about? Some say it's more about a bruised ego. Here's Marketplace's Jeff Horwich.
A AAA rating, once lost, is not gone forever, but it's gone for a while. Treasury's analyst Gennady Goldberg of Forecast says it's a multi-step process. Before returning to AAA, the U.S. first has to remove itself from a so-called negative outlook. That's S&P's way of saying it expects things will be bad for a while.
It would take at least maybe 5 or 6 years for us to get back to AAA in the absence of, you know, just extraordinary congressional agreement, which I highly doubt.
That would mean the sort of grand compromise that eluded policymakers this summer. Goldberg says S&P's statement on the downgrade suggests a return to AAA would take a wholesale upending of the current political climate.
A large part of the statement was just essentially that there was no agreement. Nobody was willing to give and take, and, you know, there were certain unnamed parties that kind of blocked anything that came their way.
S&P says both sides need to slay their sacred cows. For Democrats, that's fixing Medicare and Social Security. For Republicans, raising taxes. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
Well, Steve, with all the rough economic news lately, sometimes it's not a bad idea to just stop and sing a song.
No, I know that. Smell the roses? No,
that's what
sing
you
a
like to
too.
Do sometimes in
I
your
do.
Office.
I like to hum. Absolutely.
Well, that's exactly what Gary Russo has been doing. He's been singing a song at work. He's a construction worker who's part of the team that's building the new Second Avenue subway line in New York City.
Yeah.
And every day at lunch, he stops to belt out some Sinatra for people passing by. And I have to say, he's not half bad.
Like painted kites, those days and nights, they went flying by. The world was new beneath the blue umbrella sky.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Here's an economic bright spot. The latest report on how much stuff the U.S. ships by truck shows an increase from May to June and a year-over-year jump of almost 7%. But there may be fewer truckers available to move all that freight, as Ben Philpott reports now from KUT in Austin, Texas.
There are really two driver shortages facing the trucking industry, quantity and quality. Over the last few years, regulators have been rating truck drivers and the companies they work for, get a low score for anything from unsafe driving to improper loading, and a pink slip may not be far behind. Bob Costello is with the American Trucking Association.
That's not necessarily a bad thing. We want the best people out there driving truck, no doubt about it, but it does make some operational challenges, and finding qualified drivers is one of them.
Fewer qualified drivers was okay during the recession, when there was less stuff to ship, but as the economy picks back up, the lack of drivers has become an issue, especially in Texas.
It would impact all ports, it would impact all sectors across the state.
John Esparza heads up the Texas Motor Transportation Association. He says Texas needs more truckers to haul goods from its Gulf Coast ports and many oil refineries. And there's another factor that could limit trucking capacity. This fall, the federal government is considering new regulations that would cut the number of hours a driver can work. The American Trucking Association's Bob Costello says the rules would force companies to hire more drivers for trucking relays to get goods delivered in a timely manner.
We will need 5 to 7% more trucks and drivers to haul the same amount of freight. So yes, that would exacerbate the shortage.
National and state trucking associations say current time limits are sufficient and the new rules wouldn't improve safety. The groups hope to convince federal regulators of this before they finalize the rules in October. In Austin, I'm Ben Philpott for Marketplace.
Well, after the financial meltdown, Congress decided bigger hedge funds should disclose information about who's investing and how much they're investing, which could be a boon for something called the family office. Economy 4.0 special correspondent David Brancaccio is with us now from New York to explain. Good morning, David.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. What is a family office?
Well, it's not a home office with a printer, file cabinet, or a cat. It's an investment company that only deals with the money of a single family, a single very rich family. And here's the thing, Steve. Family offices don't have to disclose detailed information under the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Law. Information like the names of investors, dollar figures. The privacy of a family office is attractive to folks who get nervous if you or I knew just how much money they have.
Now, why is this in the news, though, David?
Well, because the Financial Times reported that a very successful, very famous billionaire, name of George Soros, has politely asked investors in his own big hedge fund to take their money and leave the fund for good so that he can run his investments inside a family office. By the way, beyond the prying eyes of regulators.
Now, do family offices have to report to, say, tax authorities?
Yeah, they do. But a tax return isn't exactly a public filing. Marian Mihalidis, the managing director of a Chicago-based umbrella organization for these things called the Family Office Exchange, says disclosure makes no sense.
What is the point when they're managing their own family assets? They're not taking outside investors, that there's no public interest to protect.
So who can get in a family office and who can't, David?
Well, regulators have been getting more strict on this point. They're allowed to take blood relatives, quite a few steps removed, and they can take spouses, but usually not the spouse's blood relatives. So your nice brother-in-law probably can't get into your family office, Steve. In fact, the Family Office Exchange is holding seminars for families to get them up to speed on the new stricter rules, and hedge funds are worried about losing business.
Lives of the rich and not so famous, eh?
You bet.
David Brancaccio with Marketplace's Economy 4.0 series. Of course, you can learn more at our website, marketplace.org. And finally, for months and months, Google has been testing cars with no drivers, Jeremy. Of course, you've heard about these driverless cars.
Yeah.
They have these sensors and guidance.
Try to become the car of the future, right?
It is the car of the future. And these Google cars, they've been testing them a lot in Northern California. These are the cars, of course, that are retrofitted. Well, last week near Google's Mountain View, California headquarters, Jeremy, one of those driverless cars was involved in a minor fender bend.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. And you're thinking, of course, you know, yes, it is.
Stupid computer, can't figure out how to drive.
Can't figure anything how to, jeez. And no one was hurt, thank goodness, and it was like a chain reaction wreck. A Google spokesperson told the website Business Insider that the accident happened while a human was manually driving the driverless car.
Blame the humans.
Always
That's what they
the
always
humans.
Do.
That's right. Oh, boy.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your Monday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.